Hey out there, everybody. Yes, it's just me alone again when I'm recording this. Tom actually had to go out and do a supply run today because we were running out of shit everywhere. And I was like, you know, we really need to record today. And then he was like, well, I really need to go do that. So, and you know, this movie, he kind of watched it partly, but he couldn't really hang with it, I guess. So he's like, well, you can just handle it because you like this movie. And he's like, I didn't really like it because it was too surreal for him. It was just like too out there. And he wasn't really into it. So I decided that I was just going to talk about it myself. This is Alejandro Jodorowsky's film Santa Sangre from 1989. Now, I saw this movie a really long time ago, probably like 15 or 20 years ago, because me and my friend used to hang out at her house like all the time and have sleepovers and whatnot. And we were always like trying to watch like the weirdest shit ever. Like we really were into just very weird cinema. So this was one of the ones that we ended up watching. And I remembered like really, really liking it. And some of the images like really stuck with me for a really long time, but I hadn't seen it for ages. And then the other day, I was scrolling through all the shit on Tubi, and I noticed that it was on there for free. So if you haven't seen it and you want to watch it, it's on Tubi for free right now, at least in the United States. So I decided, what the hell, you know, I will watch it again because it's been so long since I've seen it. See if I still like it as much, and we'll talk about it on the show. And it's interesting because I had forgotten a lot of stuff about this movie, but like a lot of the images, like when I saw the movie again, like really, really stuck with me. I mean, the thing about Alejandro Jodorowsky is, I mean, anybody that's into weird cinema or, you know, surrealist cinema or anything like that knows who the dude is. I mean, I guess he kind of came to prominence, you know, the early 70s, I want to say, with El Topo, which was kind of like a weird, funny Western kind of. I haven't seen that for a really long time either. And it made like the midnight movie circuit in New York City. It was like a huge like midnight movie success, like those big lines and like everybody was talking about it. And he also made one called The Holy Mountain, which is even weirder than this one, if that's possible. I feel like this movie, it usually gets called a horror movie, which I guess it sort of is. But it's like a surrealist horror movie. It's kind of like Psycho, except with weird giallo elements, and also if everyone involved is on acid. But like, interestingly, Alejandro Jodorowsky has said that he's like, the thing about making these types of surrealist movies and stuff, it's like, yeah, you know, everybody says, oh, it helps to be on acid to watch it, which I'm sure it probably does. But he wants the movie itself to give you the same feeling as if you were on acid without actually being on acid. And I think to a large extent, he does succeed. Now, even though this movie is surrealist, it's not super hard to follow. You know what I mean? It's like stuff does happen in it. There is like a story behind it. Like I said, it's almost kind of like a weird, like, Mexican, you know, acid trip version of Psycho, in the sense that it's kind of like a slasher. It kind of has the weird, like, fucked up dynamic between the son and the mother, you know, and the mom is like making him kill women and stuff. So it's kind of like through that same lens. I would say too that it also has a little bit of a giallo sensibility, because it was co-written by Claudio Argento, the brother of Dario Argento. So in the sense that the murders are very stylized, like very overwrought, very gory, like over the top gory, like almost ridiculously so. And so that's very giallo-like. And there's also a lot of the lighting, and so like the really, really bright, like pink lights and blue lights, and just everything is just very grotesque. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, that's it's just a whole like grotesque aesthetic to it. So the story of Santa Sangre, and like I said, this came out in 1989. It's actually set in Mexico, but it's in English. It's all dubbed into English, much like a lot of the Italian movies of the period were, where they just dubbed everybody into one language. This is kind of like that too. So it's weird because it almost, I don't know if he did it on purpose or if it was just like an expedient type of, you know, we just want to release it in America, so we'll just like dub everything in English. But I think it does help with like the surrealist atmosphere of it a little bit, because the dubbing is like a little bit weird and a little bit off. So it takes place in Mexico, and it's kind of centered around a circus, basically called the Gringo Circus, or like Circus de Gringo or something like that. So it starts out when the main character, whose name is Phoenix, when he's a kid. Now, this kid is played by one of Alejandro Jodorowsky's sons as a kid. And also when he's older in the movie, that is another one of his sons who was an adult at the time, like in his 20s or whatever. So this little kid is in the circus. He's like the child magician or whatever. And his dad, Orgo, is like this big, like disgusting pig of a man who's just like always like rooting around after the women or whatever. And he's the knife thrower. And his mom, Concha, is like an aerialist. Like she hangs up by her hair and like does all this stuff like up on a rope and like trapeze type stuff. Now, this is, like I said, some messed up shit. Like I said, I'm going to describe this movie. I'm going to spoil it. So, you know, if you haven't seen it yet, it's on Tubi for free. If you want to go watch it, you know, take a couple tabs and like sit there and watch the shit and like just let it. It's going to sound like I'm tripping balls, like when I tell everybody what happens in it, if you don't know, or that you're tripping balls. I don't know. But I assure you, neither one of us is tripping balls. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not. But this is like some crazy shit that happens in the movie. So Phoenix is having kind of a rough day. Like his dad is, like I said, he's kind of an abusive pig. His mom is kind of wacky. I mean, she's not only does she work in the circus, but she is also like the head priestess or whatever of this cult, like a religious cult that is called Santa Sangre or Holy Blood. And it worships, their patron saint is this girl that got raped and got her arms cut off. So they have this little ramshackle church that they've built, and it has this big pool of ostensibly blood in the middle, and then they have like a paper mache kind of icon of this like girl like with a little school uniform like with no arms, and so they kind of worship her. So when you're introduced to her character at first, I guess they built this little ramshackle church like on someone else's property, like some developer wants the property or something. It's not like super clear. And so they're going to tear it down. So they end up doing that. So like I said, you're seeing Phoenix as a kid is you're seeing that all the like trauma that happened like over a really brief period that ended that like explains like what happened to him later on. So he sees his mom like, you know, trying to keep the church from getting torn down, but they don't succeed. They bulldoze it, and she's like freaking out and everything. So he gets upset about that. Then he sees his dad, Orgo, going after the tattooed lady, who's like this, you know, real big, like voluptuous chick with like all this red curly hair, and she's you know, she does this fucking shit where she's like sticking her butt in her face like back and toward him and everything, and I guess she's like the you know, the subject of the knife, of Orgo's knife throwing. So I guess they're kind of having a affair or something, and she's also, the tattooed lady is also an asshole because she has a daughter named Alma who is a mime and like a tightrope walker, who's like a little girl, and her and Phoenix have kind of a thing. Like they're kind of, you know, in love sort of, you know, they don't like go super into it, but you can tell that it's like young love and everything. But the tattooed lady is like really mean to Alma and is like really kind of a shithead to her. So what ends up happening here is that Orgo is fucking around with the tattooed lady, and Concha, the mom, she finds out about it, and she's like up there doing her act or whatever, and she sees the two of them like making out and then like going off, you know, to have sex in the trailer. So she like makes the people like let her down, and then she runs in there and throws acid on her husband's crotchular area. Let's put it like that. And so he flips the fuck out and runs out of the shit, like, after her. And she runs out. And then he catches up with her and cuts off her arms. Like, he takes, like, two of his knives and, like, cuts her arms off. And they kind of fall to the ground. It's, like, a great shot. Like, they shoot it from above. It's, like, just, it's crazy. And then he cuts his own throat. Now, after this, because Orgo is not there anymore, and this is all turned into a huge shit show, the tattooed lady takes off with Alma. And this upsets, you know, Phoenix very much, because not only has he has his dad died in front of him, he's seen his mom get her arms cut off in front of him, his little girlfriend gets taken away. Oh, and I forgot to mention, too, that also one of the elephants dies, and that's, like, really traumatic. They have, like, this hilariously, grotesquely weird, like, funeral for the elephant with, like, this big giant coffin, and they, like, take it through the streets, and, like, then they dump the carcass, like, down this thing, and, like, all these people at, you know, this kind of shanty town, like, come and get all the meat out of the coffin. It's, like, it's crazy. And so that was upsetting to him. And also, before his dad died, his dad, like, pretty much carved, like, a tattoo of, like, a phoenix, so, like, an eagle or something, like, in his chest, like, to make him a man or something. So this kid's had a rough day. So all of that shit happened. Like, I don't think it was a single day, but it's the way they shot it, it kind of just seemed like a day or two. So then they kind of skip forward to when Phoenix is grown up. And I guess he's been in a lunatic asylum for, like, all this time, ever since those incidents occurred when he was a kid. And he basically thinks that, I mean, true to his name, I guess he thinks he's a phoenix, because he spends most of his time, like, in his cell, and he's naked, and he, like, sits up in a tree, and they put a tree in there for him, which was nice, I guess. So he sits up there, and, like, they bring him food and shit, but he won't eat it. Like, the only food that he'll eat, if they have to bring him, like, a raw fish, and then he'll sit there and, like, eat the fish like a bird would, I guess. So there's that whole thing. Now, it comes to pass that, so I guess he's been in here for years, and there's kind of an inciting incident, which I guess I didn't realize was the inciting incident when I was actually watching it, because I'm just sitting here going, what the fuck does this have to do with anything? But when I thought about it afterward, I was like, oh, well, that was what, caused him to, cause the, you know, the events of this timeline to, like, come to fruition. So what ends up happening is that the people, like, the staff at the hospital, they take the patients, like, to the movies every now and then. Now, it seems like Phoenix is not only the only, I guess he's, I don't know if he's the only adult, because the rest of them look like kids, but all the other patients have, like, developmental disorders. They have, like, Down syndrome and stuff. And they're just, like, real, like, kids with Down syndrome that are in this movie. So they're going to take them to see Robinson Crusoe, I think. So they take all the kids down to the movie theater, but then they leave them in the care of this super sketchy, like, dirtbag. And he's like, you know, I have a better idea. We could do something more fun than going to the movie. So he gives all the Down syndrome kids cocaine and then takes them to, like, a whorehouse. They all seem to enjoy themselves. But so I guess, like, the next day, like, after they have brought them back to the hospital, so I guess, like, the cocaine and the experience of the red light district and everything, and I think while they were out, he also saw, like, the tattooed lady, because she was, like, out there hooking or whatever. And so this kind of causes him, because he says he feels really good and everything, but then he hears his mom's voice, like, calling him from outside of the asylum. And he looks out there, and she's standing out there, like, with no arms. So he escapes from the asylum, and they go off together. Now, what ends up happening here, or so you think, because, like I said, I'm going to spoil it, because I had totally forgotten, like, what the ending of this was. So what you think happens is that, I mean, she has no arms, obviously. So he starts acting as her arms in, like, a weird, it's not a burlesque show, but it's kind of like a performance. Like, she comes out and sings, and she does this weird, like, spoken word thing about the Garden of Eden and everything. And he stands behind her, and he has his nails all painted, like a woman's nails and everything. And, like, he's like moving her hands for her. So he's pretty much acting as her hands. Also, though, he thinks that she can control the hands all the time, like even when, like with her mind, I guess. So it's kind of like the hands of Orlok, if you guys saw like that old silent movie where the guy loses his hand. He was a pianist and he lost his hands in an accident. And then he thought that he got like a murderer's hands. And so he thought that he like had lost control of his body parts and they were doing shit like without his authorization. So that's kind of what's going on here. Phoenix thinks that his mom is controlling his hands and his mom is making him go around killing women, much like I said, Norman Bates and his mom, because I guess in the mom's mind, they're all whores. So, I mean, the first one to go is the tattooed lady. I mean, obviously, because she had a personal beef with her. So that's like a pretty hilarious and like grotesque scene. Like, you know what I mean? It's very giallo-esque. It's just like stabbing and just blood spraying everywhere. So, but as it goes on, he starts to, you know, he kills all these women, but he doesn't seem to have any control over it. And he seems to be like getting really upset about it. So while all that's going on, there's also like, once the tattooed lady gets killed, Alma is still around and, she's grown up now a little bit, obviously. And the mom has been pimping her out, which, you know, that's lovely. And she's like trying, so the mom gets killed, she escapes, and then she goes and tries to find Phoenix. So as it goes on, like all these women get murdered, and finally, like Phoenix is kind of trying to get away from like his mother's power, I guess. Like he picks up this one, I guess it's a trans woman. But it's like, she's like a real big, you know, I don't know. I said, I don't know if it's an actual trans person or if it's just a man in drag. Like, you can't really tell. But Phoenix thinks that she's like, well, this person will be able to stop me because they'll just beat the shit out of me like before I can kill them and then everything will be okay. But it doesn't quite work out the way he wants it to. And what ends up happening is that finally Alma finds him and Alma means soul, I guess. So I guess she's supposed to be like, she was like his salvation. So she comes there and she shows him like the weird thing for a second. You walk into this house because it looks like they live in this big, crazy, like three-story house. And it's kind of nice. And there's like a shrine with the armless lady and all this other stuff. And, but when Alma first comes in there, it looks like a total shithole. Like it's all fucked up and, you know, the shrine is there, but all the furniture and shit that we've seen like up to this point is not there anymore. So then you're starting to think, what the fuck is going on here? Well, as it turns out, much like in Psycho, the mom died back in the day, like the same day that Orgo died, the knife thrower. Like she died when her arms got cut off, as you probably would because it was fucking spraying blood everywhere and you would bleed to death in seconds. So she died back then, and I guess Phoenix, because like I said, it was a real rough day when he was a kid and he couldn't deal with it. So he basically dissociated. And after the whole cocaine thing and seeing the tattooed lady again and bringing it all back, after he escaped from the asylum, he started fantasizing that his mom was still around and that he was acting as her arms and that she was controlling him like from beyond the grave or something like that. So as it turned out, the act that he was doing with her, like where he was being the hands, like he put his hands like behind, you know, they've had these special sleeves and like they put him in there and like he would play the piano for her. He would like knit socks. He would do all kind of shit. I mean, the way that they set that up, it was fucking great. They must have like rehearsed the shit out of that because it really did look like, from certain angles, it really did look like her arms, even though it was him, because he was always, like, behind her. And, you know, it's like, he's fucking drinking coffee for her and, like, eating, and also, it was crazy. So, you find out that, like, the act that he was doing and all the stuff that he was doing in the house that we saw before, where the mom was, like, berating him and, like, getting him to play the piano and, like, yelling at him who's fucking it up or whatever, was just a dummy of her. It wasn't really her because she had been dead for a really long time. So when Alma finally shows him, like, the dummy and, you know, tries to get him to, like, come back to himself and realize that, you know, she's dead the whole time. And then it's kind of like this big triumphant ending, even though the cops come at the end because he killed a lot of people, like, as they show. It's like, you don't realize because you only see him, like, kill a couple of them. But I guess off screen, he's killed a shit ton, because at one point there's a scene where all these women, like, in these veils and shit are, like, climbing at all these graves that he made, like, in the yard or whatever. So he's been killing people for a really long time. So the cops come at the end and they tell him to put their hands up, like, Alma puts her hands up, and he, like, looks at his arms like they're not, because he thinks they're not his, but then finally he puts his hands up and he's all excited because he finally has realized that these are his arms and he can control himself, and even though now he's probably going to prison or going back to the mental hospital, because, like I said, he's still a serial killer. I mean, you know, even though he was crazy and he dissociated. But yeah, so this movie, like I said, it's not as weird as Holy Mountain. I can't remember how weird El Topo was. I kind of feel like it was weird, but maybe not as weird as this. This movie is like, okay, like, Tom, like I said, could not hang with it, because it's just like, he kind of liked at the beginning, he's like, I really liked the idea, I liked the kind of the look of it, but he's like, it's just too, he was like, it was just too much, it's just too surreal. He's not a big fan of, like, surrealist cinema, which, I get that. I know some people aren't. It's like, I see how there's a very fine line between just being surrealist or being, you know, using a lot of symbolism or stuff and just being pretentious. But the thing about this one is that I really do, this one, it has, like, a lot of energy. It's not just, like, a weird, it's not just weird for weirdness's sake, is what I'm saying. It's just, like, a lot of the symbolism in it, a lot of the, you know, why it's weird, like, for a reason. He's not just trying to, you know, be like, ooh, does this freak you out? Ooh, does that freak you out? Or anything like that. It just seems like he has a reason for everything that he put into the movie, not just to be there, like, weird for the sake of being weird. Other people might disagree. I don't know. But I do feel like this has gotten, like, you know, it's gotten really good, like, critical reviews, everything. Like I said, there's so much symbolism in it. It's essentially a coming-of-age story, or a story about someone coming to terms with grief, coming to terms with trauma, like, from their childhood, and learning to stand on their own two feet and learning to control their own actions. So it's not like it's just coming out of nowhere or it doesn't have a plot or anything like that. I mean, things happen in the movie, you know, and it's this happens because of that, and then that happens because of that. It's like, it's a pretty standard narrative for a surrealist film. It's just that a lot of the imagery is very weird and grotesque and things like that. But I don't know. Is it, again, this is just kind of like when we talked about Ninth Configuration last week, which a couple of you told me that you had watched, because, like I said, that's a free for free on Tubi as well. And some people were like, man, I couldn't get into it, which I get, because the first 20, 30 minutes of that are just, like, bizarrely off-putting. This one, I think, is less off-putting in the sense, but you have to know what you're getting into. This is just, like, an over-the-top grotesquerie that's kind of, like, it's not even, I mean, David Lynch does surrealism, too, but this is, like, a different kind of thing. It's just, it's very, very colorful. It's very circusy. It's just very, you know, and it's very gory. Like, you know, there's a lot of gore in it, a lot of blood. It's not, so I don't know if I would call it a horror movie outright, but it does have, like, a really lot of horror elements, and it does have a lot of giallo elements, like I said, which should not be too surprising since it was co-written by Claudio Argento. But yeah, it's like, check it out. It's free. If you want to watch it, just tell me what you thought of it, or if you've seen any of, you know, any of Jodorowsky's other films. This, I mean, if you've seen, like, the drawings that they did for, like, his proposed, you know, Dune adaptation, which never came to pass, famously, you'll kind of know what kind of visual thing you're getting in for. But yeah, check it out. Tell me what you think. But, speaking of giallo, this is very interesting. When I was on Tubi last night and I watched Santa Sangre, And then it has like the little, you know, recommendations at the bottom. One of the recommendations on there was a documentary called All the Colors of Giallo, about Giallo movies, obviously. So I started watching that because I was like, well, shit, man, I wouldn't have even have found that if I, because there's so much shit on there that you have to like wade through, as I said before. So I started watching that. I didn't quite finish it because, you know, I was getting really tired because it was kind of late and, you know, it still had like another half hour to go. I will say that if you are not real big into Giallo movies, I wouldn't recommend it because it's not a kind of, this is an introduction to the genre, you know, this is some of the movies and all this other kind of stuff. It's much more, they just kind of have a handful of people, like some film historians. They have Dario Argento's on there, Dardano Sacchetti, who wrote a lot of Lucio Fulci's movies. They have like some archival like interviews with Lucio Fulci, which are hilarious because like him and Dario Argento really did not like each other. So they were like really bitchy. So that was very funny. But yeah, so they have just like really long interviews with these people with not, and then they'll have like a few clips of the movies like in between. So it's kind of like a lot of talking heads, but I mean, I thought it was really interesting, but if you're not really into Giallo movies, then I wouldn't recommend it because it's basically just like really long interviews with a couple of people. One thing I did really like about it though, was they had Dardano Sacchetti on there talking, like I said, and he wrote a bunch of Lucio Fulci's movies, like including House by the Cemetery, like his, you know, The Beyond, all those. But he also wrote The Psychic, otherwise known as Murder to the Tune of Seven Black Notes, which I actually think is my favorite Fulci giallo movie. Might be my favorite Fulci movie overall, although I don't know, The Beyond and House by the Cemetery are really good too. But, I thought it was interesting because Dardano Sacchetti was saying, he's like, this is my favorite giallo that I did with Lucio Fulci, and it's like, and I feel like it sucks because it just, it didn't go anywhere. Like, it didn't get any good box office, like, in Italy. Like, people didn't give a shit about it. Nobody really talks about it anymore. And he's like, and it's my favorite one. It, like, came out exactly the way I wanted it, and it was perfect. And it's weird because, like, even for my blog, like, a long time ago, I wrote about that movie, and I was like, why the fuck doesn't anybody that talks about Lucio Fulci talk about this movie? Because I love that fucking movie. It's like a giallo, but it also has a little bit of a supernatural element, too. So it's not like, you know, it's not like a real textbook one. But I love the fucking setup of it, because the setup of it is this woman who's a psychic, obviously, and she has this really weird, like, disjointed vision, and the cool part of the movie, it's like a mystery, you know, like a giallo usually is, but the cool part of the movie is seeing how all of this stuff that she sees in her vision and how she interprets how it's going to happen, but that's not ever exactly how the shit ends up happening. And also her vision, you don't know which parts of it are the future, which parts of it are the past. And it makes it really good, but it's really, really well constructed. I actually want to do a retrospective on it one of these days. I used to have it on DVD. I don't know where the fuck it is, though. It must be up in the attic someplace, like most of my other shit is. But yeah, so as I said, if you're into like surrealist horror, or just not, like I said, and if you love like circus kind of shit, because this is just full of like crazy circus imagery, then you will probably love Santa Sangre if you haven't seen it. But keep in mind, like I said, it's very weird, it's very overwrought, it's very gory, but it's for free on Tubi in the US. So if you want to watch it, then check it out and let me know what you thought in the comments section. And I guess that'll do it for this lonely movie retrospective. Anyway, like, share, subscribe, you know, do all this shit that you normally do. And I'll talk to you next time. Bye.